What's up, my beautiful people? Another great day here inside the Black Actors Studio. I'm your host, Danny Royce, and today we have a very super talented actor, comedian, writer, producer, and director. You've seen him recently on BET's New Edition story, and also most recently portraying Eddie Murphy in The Price of Fame. Don't move a muscle.
Tuned into Black Hollywood Live, the world's first digital broadcast network devoted entirely to urban entertainment and pop culture. Tune in right now.
What's going on, everyone? Welcome to Inside the Black Actor Studio. Our guest today is constantly reinventing himself. He's taken the stage of stand-up comedy. You've seen him in HBO series The Wire. Also, CW's Everybody Hates Chris. The one, the only, the Black Actor Studio is proud to welcome Melvin Jackson Jr. How are you doing, buddy?
Doing good, man. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for being here. How are you feeling today?
Feeling great, man.
That's awesome. Every day alive is a great day, right?
Exactly right.
Well, I want to say, first off, congratulations on your Emmy nomination.
Thank you, thank you.
And just tell us a moment how you felt when you found that out, that you were nominated.
It was an interesting story. I went to look up, you know, my wife's first, because she was also being considered, and she got nominated as well for The Handmaid's Tale, Kelly Jenrette. And so when I went to call her and tell her, I didn't even look to see if I was nominated. She was like, I said, you were nominated. She was like, I know. What about you? I said, I don't know. She looked up and she said, you're nominated too. So it's just like, that was like the beautiful moment to find out from my wife that I was nominated.
Yeah, and that's amazing. Kelly Jenrette, you're the first couple, right, to be nominated?
First
African-American couple to be nominated in the same year. That's dope. Yeah. That's crazy. Awesome.
Right.
So I like to start from the beginning. Where are you born?
Washington, D.C.
Washington, D.C. All right. And how was that growing up for you in D.C.?
It was amazing. You know, D.C. is you know, the capital. And so I went from, you know, D.C., moved to Maryland. And then from Maryland, I went overseas for about 8.5 years of my life.
Mm-hmm.
And so I grew up, you know, overseas for 8.5 years.
Wow.
That kind of, you know, shaped and molded me into this individual that I am today, in the sense of just being multicultural.
Yeah, for sure.
And understanding different cultures and respecting people and just knowing how to deal with different people who are different from you.
Right. Wow. So your father, what did he do?
My father, he actually, you know, was a chef. You know, he cooked when he was over there. It was my mom who, you know, was one who got us over there. She worked, you know, for the government and everything.
Okay.
So that was what took us over to overseas.
Overseas. Okay. And then your mother, how was your relationship with your mother growing up?
Very close. You know, I'm a mama's boy. And so it's one of those things where you're like, my mom was the one who first believed in me before I believed in myself.
Mm.
And she told me, son, you could do anything you put your mind to. And so I could tell her I want to go to the moon. She's like, when we going? You know, she's just
nice.
Very supportive. And my mom's just been my rock, man. And I couldn't have done this and being where I am today without her. You know, my father showed me that what hard work looks like. You know,
for
he
sure.
was more of a realist, like, I don't know about all this acting stuff,
right.
son, but I need to, you know, we need to go out there and get a job, make sure you get that good government job. And
yeah.
my mom was like, son, follow your dream.
Wow.
Whatever you want to do, I support you.
Wow. So how was it, because you have a sister, right?
Yes.
And it's just you two.
My sister and my brother.
And your brother,
yes.
So three of you. And you are the oldest, middle young?
Middle.
You're the middle.
Yeah.
All right. And how was that, being the middle child and having that conflicting, like, perspective of life, so to speak, and how you should move forward in your career from their parents?
It was just, I don't know. I was one in the beginning. I was a troubled child. I got in trouble a lot, and I think I was just seeking to find who I was and wanted, you know, attention. So it was trying to find who I was, and so it was just different. Like when we went overseas, my sister was there for a little bit, and then my sister went to a boarding school. My brother, you know, has a different mother than I do, so you know he was in the States, and so it was just kind of like when my sister left, it was just me.
Mm-hmm.
So It was just like I said, trying to find my way, and got in trouble along the way. But I just definitely had, you know, that relationship with my mom. I could talk to my dad about anything. And so it was just simply, you know, figuring out who I could be.
Right.
And once I figured that out, then I started to strive and be great and, you know, do sports and all these different things.
That's awesome. So did you have any nicknames growing up?
Yeah, my father used to call me Mel Mel. I didn't like that. I had Mel Mel. People call me Silk because they say I look like Silk the Shocker.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Okay, I can see that. Wow. Okay, so you went to school in D.C., right? And then you went to Bowie.
I went to school in Fairmont Heights, was my high school. But when before that, I was in George C. Marshall in Turkey. And then I went to international school, Islamabad, when I was in Pakistan.
In Pakistan, right. And so, yeah, we're going to get to that in a second, because I think that's very interesting. So in school, did you do any plays or any acting or anything like that?
No, man. That's the funny thing. I didn't know that I was going to be an actor. That wasn't something that I strive to do. Mm-hmm. I think I had a love for music, and so music was kind of something that I wanted to do. I danced and was in talent shows. So I didn't really know exactly, like, acting was that thing, because I wasn't like, oh, I want to be an actor. It was like, I watched it, and I'm like, oh, I think I could maybe do this. But I never pursued it.
Yeah.
And so it was kind of like I slipped and fell in that situation.
Okay. All right. And sometimes, you know, a lot of times a craft pulls people. Right. You know, you don't always look for it. So, yeah, you lived in Turkey and Pakistan. Yes. So let's talk about that a little bit. Coming from D.C. to going over there, it's definitely a culture shock.
Yes.
So talk to me about a little bit of how it was growing up for you over there.
It was amazing, man, because you got to, you know, see a different country. You got to live somewhere that was just different from where you were from.
Right.
And I think that it allowed me to appreciate what I had, because, like, over there, you know, you see poverty and everything, and they're, you know, they want to go to America because that's like their milk and honey. And we're like, what? Like, we're complaining about America, but to them, like, that is the greatest thing. Mm-hmm. And just to see people wash up and the same water that they're drinking out of, and eat, you know, it's just very humbling for me as a young kid, and be like, okay, I got to be more appreciative of the things that I have. But the beautiful thing is, like, when we were over there, it was like we had a gardener, we had a maid, we were rich, mom. Like, I feel like we were rich. But I think that was also a setup for my life, you know, in a sense of having things that you want, but you got to work hard for it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if you do want a maid, you want a gardener, all those things, you got to work hard for those things and showing that you can have.
Right.
So it didn't spoil me, but it also made me want more. And then it also made me appreciate, you know, what I was around and who I was around, the friends, the different languages I was able to learn, and just the culture.
Mm.
How we're not too different. Even though the world may show us as different, we're not too different from each other when we have a conversation. We're the same. We want the same thing. We bleed the same.
Right.
We hurt the same.
Right.
It's just we may speak a different language. We may look differently, but we're the same in some kind of way.
Yeah, I love that. Yeah, for sure. And so you mentioned you learned different languages, right?
Yeah.
So do you still speak any of those now?
I used to speak Urdu, like assalamu alaikum, alaikum salam. You know, just a little stuff like that. You pick up the bad words first.
Of course.
But definitely it was, you know, just learning those languages, and I'm mad that I didn't keep as much as I wanted to learning it, because you learn a lot as a kid. You soak it up. So I used to speak it a little bit more fluent than I do now.
Okay. And your mom worked for the government? Is she like a CIA?
She retired now, but,
can you let us know? No. All right. That's dope, though. So when you were younger, did you see any shows on TV or any films that really kind of inspired you, or any people of color shows, like the Jeffersons, anything like that? Like, did you see a lot of that out there?
Absolutely. I mean, yeah, they had a lot of stuff out there. It's funny that I was watching soap operas a lot back then too, so like it was crazy. But
nice.
I did watch like the Jeffersons and What's Happening and all that stuff. Like, the crazy thing is, like, the movies I started watching, it was like totally different. Like, it's multicultural in a sense where it's like it was some things that I, you know, that you would normally watch as African-American kid, but it's like I had a lot of Caucasian friends.
Yeah.
So I watched a lot of things. Like, I would watch Dirty Dancing, one of my favorite movies. Mm-hmm. You know, Grease. I'm watching Grease. So it's like it allowed me to see other people in a different way and understand, like I said, we're the same. And
exactly.
So you have your African-American black shows, and you have your Caucasian shows. And so it was just like, it wasn't like I like one over the other. It was like that was good acting, good entertainment, good movie, good. It was just, it allowed me to not look at color.
Yeah, that's great. I mean, that's awesome. So your sister, you have a good relationship with your sister?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I'm really close to my sister. I'm like her big little brother.
Her big little brother, I like that. And so how was pursuing your dream? Well, first I want to get into, because you're a manager, right?
Yeah.
You're managing music talent and modeling and things like that at 18 years old.
Yeah.
So first off, how did you get into that, and how was that industry?
It was interesting. I think it was in my first year in college, and I could say I just had a I had a love for music, and I just had an eye for talent. And so I just decided to come up with the, you know, management company at the time, and I started, you know, seeking, you know, artists. And so I was at a talent show one time, and I saw an artist, and, you know, me and him started talking and clicked, and I just went in, man. Like, nice. I people used to call me, like, a young Puffy because, like, just the way I carried myself, I was like a hustler. And so that's who I kind of emulated a little bit in the sense of just how to handle business and get things done. And so it was that perseverance that I had that just made me want to understand, like, I'm 18, but doesn't mean that I can't, you know, go toe-to-toe with the best of them. And so that's what it was. I had to make a name for myself, and I had to prove myself, and that's what I was able to do. Where I went from, you know, talking to the A&Rs to now talking to the vice presidents of the company because it's like, man, this dude is persistent, and he's sending demos. I'm putting up press kits and everything. And so it was just, like, I just love music. I just love the business that I wanted to make these people's dream come true.
That's awesome.
And I did I worked to my bone, to my fingers to the bone. And it was just like, I got to make sure that I'm able to help them get to the next level.
Right. Man, that's perseverance, that hunger.
Yeah.
Like, you really have that. Wow. So when you were 18 and you were in the music industry, was there anyone that really, like, motivated you, anyone that really inspired you in the music industry at that moment?
I mean, like I said, definitely Puffy. You know, Puffy, he was the one that I looked up, you know, to, and just saw, like, where he started from, you know, being an intern and, you know, taking the train from Howard to New York, and how he, you know, he got him so fired, but then ended up getting, you know, someone to believe in him, like a Clive Davis, and he, you know, started Bad Boy. So it's just like, you know, things may not go the way you want them to, but then they happen. And then they come to find out that my father's name are both Melvin. You know, it's crazy. You know what I mean? So just the dude was just on top. He was just on top of his game back then. He was a hustler. So I just, you know, looked up. That's the only person I could see myself at, you know, as in that moment, as far as, you know, the things that he did in the business, just kind of how he got stuff done.
Right, for sure. Wow. And so when you moved to L.A., when was that?
That was 2007.
2007. Sorry.
Yeah, 2007. Yeah.
So, was that the moment where you were said to yourself that I'm going to get into acting? I'm going to do this. I'm going to give it 100%.
No, I've been acting since 2001.
2001. Okay.
So I was in Maryland when I first started, and it started out with a PSA. Like, I auditioned for a PSA, this modeling company I was with, and I never, like I said, never thought about acting. But I, you know, dibble and dabble in certain things, and so I booked that job, and I was like, oh, okay, this is something I did it well, and I'm like, okay, let me start taking it serious. So I started watching movies and actually, like, learning, not just playing around. Like, let me learn, let me try to emulate these people and make my own style. And so that's how I did. I didn't take any acting classes, and, you know, I end up, you know, getting a chance to audition for The Wire after being an extra. And then after 15 times, finally got, you know, cast in the role. And that just was allowed me to come out to L.A. and be like, all right, now I have something to stand on. Because it would have been different coming out here with no credit or nothing.
Right.
So it kind of helped me being on a hot show like The Wire to come out to L.A. And now it's like people have to take you serious.
For sure.
And you see the opportunities that you're able to get.
Right. So what speaking of that, like, there are a lot of people that come out here with really nothing, no ground to stand on, but they are hungry.
Right.
What's one thing you can say to them? The people that are moving out here and they have that dream and that goal, but no credits or anything to show for it.
Understand that you have to come out here with a plan, have a foundation. I you know, when I came out here in 2005, I was trying to do acting full time and it just wasn't panning out. I was on unemployment and was just like, I can't live like this.
Right.
So I went home and I got a job and I transferred out here. So I tell people, I said, you know, don't be afraid to have a job because you want to be able to fulfill your dream, but you also want to be able to live too. They call this thing the struggling artist, which I don't subscribe to. I was like, don't be that.
Right.
Eating ramen noodles, you know, it takes away from your craft because now you're going to auditions with this pressure. Like, I got to book this because I got to pay the rent. I got to do this. But you want to go into an audition without that extra pressure. Like, you already have it to be like, let me go in there, try to have fun. But it's like when you go in there with that pressure of saying, oh, I got to book this because.
Oh, I'm sorry. My bad. Live chat came on.
Yeah, like, you just don't want that pressure on you. So I tell them, I said, have a game plan. Have a plan in action, but understand that. Make sure that you can support yourself first, and then focus on your dream and your craft. And even if you don't have credits, create something yourself.
Right,
you know, there's people that are creating web series and creating all these opportunities so many times, and you have to just continue to believe in yourself. And until somebody else takes that chance on you, you got to continue to take a chance on yourself.
Right. I agree for sure. And the creativity, we'll get into your creative ends of producing and all that in just a little bit. So, so one of your first works here in LA was The Wire, correct?
No, not in LA. The Wire was done in Maryland.
Maryland. Yeah. Okay. So you had The Wire in Maryland. Yeah. And then after that was
Everybody Hates Chris,
yeah. right? So yeah, how was it working and being directed by Chris Rock?
It was amazing. You know, Chris Rock is a legend. And so he was there every time I was there. He was there on set. He's very hands-on because it's his life.
Yeah.
So it was a pleasure, but you know, for me, it was like he's a director. Like I'm a professional at this point. So, but it was like Chris Rock is directing me and the dude that played Gusto in CB4. Like it was crazy. So we had fun, and he gave a crazy, you know, funny note, and so we did that, and it worked for the scene.
And what is your technique for getting prepared for these roles that you're stepping into? And we'll get into one of the bigger roles in a little bit. Okay. But just as far as like going into an audition and getting prepared for the audition, what are some of the things you like to do?
First, definitely, you know, read through it and just kind of figure out what this character's backstory is. Mm-hmm. You know, if it's not one already, you have to create your backstory. That way you become more personal to it. And so when you create the backstory and you believe in it and you are able to walk as this character, talk as this character, then it's like, okay, now you're developing. And then you start to focus on the actual words that you're saying. Mm-hmm. And so when you have already built that, you're building up your whole package for that character so that when you go in there, you actually believe that you are that character.
Right.
So it's like, do I believe these words that I'm saying? So those are constant things, because sometimes you know you don't believe yourself. You're saying like, I don't believe that. Like, let me do that over. Like, no, I feel like I was acting. And that's the hardest thing sometimes as actors is we're acting. We're not supposed to act. We're supposed to just have a conversation.
Right,
like not, you know, if you have a conversation, you don't have to act like you're having a conversation. Uh-huh. You just have it. And so I think that was the hardest thing to remember, like not to act, but just to have the conversation. So then you build all that stuff around it, and you just go up there to where you have this character like the back of your hand, you know it, and you feel it, and you understand like what this person's feeling in this moment, how you want them to come across when you're in the audition, and you just kind of have fun.
Yeah.
You show your personality in the beginning, you show different layers, and then you try to leave it all in there.
For sure. And I think, fun, having fun is like the most important thing because it's like you're not going in there to impress anyone, you know what I mean? So I love that. So... And Chris Rock. So the next big thing, I definitely want to talk about the NAACP Image Outstanding Television Award for that you got for the 49th, I'm sorry, NAACP. You stepped into a life that we all know and love. And in the new edition story, Curtis Blow.
Yes.
So I want you to just walk us through how it was preparing for that role and preparing for the auditions, because I know BET has some strenuous stuff going on there.
Well, the audition was the same day. I was like 3:00 in the evening. I got the audition. I forgot when it was sent, but I saw it at 3:00 and the audition was maybe like 4:30.
Mm-hmm.
So I left work and I went straight over there. And so I was trying to like just read through the lines and prepare, and you know, I didn't really have time to go in there prepared as you would like. And so I just, you know, looked at the words he was saying, and I was like, how would I feel in this moment if I'm having to open up for kids and I feel like I've put in so much work?
Right.
And I'm really, like, feeling this. So I went in there and I did it, and they were like, good, you know, do it again, but do it X, Y, Z, you know, this way. And so I did that, and they were like, great. And so I just... was like, okay, I really want this role. I was like, yo, this girl is Blow. Like, New Edition is my favorite group.
Yeah,
like, I get to be in their story. I say, and they play Curtis Blow. Yeah, I want this.
Right.
So it went from my age at the time was like, I didn't hear anything. And then she, every time I look at my emails. And so then she said, you know, you're pinned. So I was like, you're pinned by the network. They really, really like you. You know, you're being considered. I'm like, cool, this is the first time being considered by a network. Like, yeah, in its capacity. So then... They called me and was like, you got the role. So I was like, okay, I got it. So now I'm like, okay, now I got to go in and really dig deep. Yeah. Because I know Chris Robinson, who's a friend of mine, I know he's going to push me.
Uh-huh.
So I was like, I got to come in there with something. So I'm looking at videos. I'm looking Crush Groove. I'm looking at interviews with Curtis Blow, because I'm like, I'm sure they're going to want me to try to sound like him or something. So yeah. I'm just trying to like, I try to make sure that I first get the character of the person right before trying to, I mean, like that voice, because that throws you off. You're trying to sound like somebody, and it's like, well, first have their mannerism down a little bit.
Right.
And so when I was on set, man, Chris Robinson, he just continued to pull the best out of me, man. And it's just like, he pushed me. They put me in hair and makeup. I transformed into Curtis Blow. It wasn't like I was trying to be him. It's like I became him. And, you know, people were like, well, what's up, Curtis Blow? I was like, huh. You know, I'm just, it just was there. And I was like, okay.
Nice.
And so I was a little mad I didn't get to perform, but yeah. It was all good.
That's dope. That's awesome. And so you're married to Kelly Durant. How long have you been married?
We've been married for 3 years.
3 years. And you have three beautiful sons, right?
Yes.
Melvin, Deshaun, and Donovan.
Yes.
You were at one point a single father, right?
Yes.
Pursuing this.
Yes.
This dream. Talk to us a little bit about that, because I know a lot of people use that as an excuse sometimes, but it's more of a way to empower you to push forward. So touch on that.
Yeah, man, I had my first son at 17, and you know, I was trying to navigate through life and figure it out, and it was just, you know, trying to pursue your dreams while having a kid is a lot. You know, like when I was 18, my first year in college, and just trying to build and make sure that I could provide for my son without making sure I didn't take from him. So that was my motivation, seeing my son and understanding, like, you can do this, but understanding who I'm doing it for. Mm-hmm. And so that was my motivation to continue to persevere and push through it all and build. And you understand it's not going to happen overnight, but, you know, to see the fruits of your labor come, you know, you be able to, you know, reap your harvest. It's like, man, like, okay. And so I get the chance to see, my son got to see certain things, and now he's, you know, pursuing entertainment stuff, and he's a great actor, and he's done some movies with me. So it's just amazing, man, when you're able to pass the torch on to your kids and you're able to see the hard work that you put in and they understand that they can do it too.
That's awesome. So what, right now, how is it for them seeing their dad on the screen?
I think they got used to it now. They've been around different, you know, celebrities, events and everything. So it's just like they're not like starstruck, you know, they just understand like this is what it is. And They love it when they're in it. And my youngest son was born in L.A., so he's like, Dad, California's always my home, no matter what. So,
right. We in here.
Right.
Yeah, so speaking of celebrities, you've met a lot of celebrities, like all the way from, like, Chris Rock to, I mean, there's so many others I've just, you can see on your website and everything and social media. Was there ever anyone that you met that you really kind of got a little geeky about, you know, and really excited?
I've been in this so long, man, that I because you don't, know, for me, I don't want to set myself up, because, you know, you look at, you put these people to a high pedestal, and you get to meet them, and it's like they're totally opposite, like,
right.
But I want to say someone that I got a chance to meet and talk to a long time ago was Oprah, and was just like really, really like amazing to talk to. You know what I mean? It was just like, I had a conversation with her about The Wire. She had never seen it before. So I was like, well, I'll make sure that you see it, you know. And it was at the Image Awards like many years ago. And I just walked up to her like she was a normal person, which, you know, she is. She's Oprah. But it's just like, I don't try to, you know, I don't want them. Sometimes you want to just feel normal. You know, people want to just feel normal. So I went up to her, had a great conversation with her. Someone I definitely respect in this business is Will Smith. You know, he's the type of person that sits and will listen to you. Like, I remember talking to him one time at a rap party, and, you know, he was walking away and I was still talking, and he came back and said, what were you saying? Like, he came back, and that's, you know, most people don't do that.
Right.
And so it was just definitely, you know, an honor to meet him. And it's some amazing people that I met in this industry, man, and that, you know, I can call friends and people that I can call, you know, mentors. And so it's just one of those things I try to, you know, get in that space and we become equal.
Right.
If I, you know, start looking at you as higher than me, then it's like, I'm doing myself a disservice, because we're supposed to be equals. We're in the same business. You may be at a higher plateau than me or whatever it may be, but I have to we have to treat each other as an equal.
Exactly.
I'm not going to let you disrespect me, and I'm not going to disrespect you.
Right. I love that. And so we got a little photo of you and Michael P. Jordan.
Yeah, that's my guy right there.
Prince of Zamunda right there.
Yeah.
And so how was that experience for you? Because you, you set yourself up, and that was at a game, right?
Yeah, that
and
was
you
at just... the, that was at 2018 All-Star game.
All-Star game, yeah. And you just walked around like that, right?
But yeah, I was, because I was going to a screening of Black Panther, and yeah. I was like, psh, I'm a bold dude. I'm a bold dude. Nobody had to dare me, but I went bold dude. I was like, I'm gonna go ahead and dress just wear this because I was gonna wear it to the screen. Nice. So I'm gonna go ahead and just wear it to the game.
Right.
And I'm just gonna walk around, man, dude. I got people taking, walking up taking pictures on me. Like
I can't imagine. Me.
Jamie Foxx came on with start singing "She's Your Queen to Be." They got it on camera, taking pictures with her. Like it was definitely dope. They was like, "Yo, you doing?" Like we need a picture with you. It was crazy.
That's awesome.
It was like Prince Hakeem. I was like, "That's me."
I mean, I love that movie for one. Yeah. I mean. Incredible movie. So Eddie Murphy, my role, not yours.
This Eddie Murphy role is mine, not yours.
Talk to us about that because you write it,
yeah.
You direct it,
I wrote it. Well, I co-wrote it with my wife.
Yeah.
I produced it and it was directed by Julio Montavio.
Montavio, and then you starred as well. So where did the creation of this web series come from?
It came from an idea I had like many years ago. I want to say like 3-4 years ago, mm-hmm. And it was just like, man, like as an actor, sometimes you're going for something you really want, and you're like, oh man, I didn't get it. Like you. Sometimes you think about taking out your competition. Like, what if I could take out my competition? So it's just me. And it was just a funny play on it. And I wrote it out. And then I, you know, had my wife look at it. And we revised it together. And we just came up with some funny little moments. Mm-hmm. And she helped me kind of like just bring it to life with just more funny.
Yeah.
And so we shot it, man. And I said I wanted to submit it for Emmy consideration last year. And I got nominated for an Emmy because of it. And that's it led awesome. To, you know, another project that we'll talk about, you know, the Price of Fame.
Yeah.
So it was definitely me believing in myself, having a vision and people around me, my friends that were in it, supporting me and joining in on my vision. And like, man, like, look what happened. And then one of my other cast members got nominated for an Indie Series Awards from it. So it's just a blessing when you're able to do something that you love. And I wanted to pay homage and a tribute to Eddie Murphy
for sure,
because he's definitely a legend and he's done so much in his business, and I think people forget what he's done.
Oh yeah. Well, I want to just watch a small clip of the series just a moment, get that going. But also, yeah, that's just great that you created this opportunity.
Yes,
you know what I mean.
Yeah.
Okay, well, we're not going to watch the clip right now, but yeah, so I watched the web series, and you know, it's funny. It's incredible.
Thank you.
Work.
Thank you. Thank you.
And so is that season one is wrapped? Or
yeah, see, okay, that was season one.
So season two will be...
We're going to begin shooting season two.
Okay.
And yeah, man, hopefully have it out, you know, if not this month, definitely beginning of next month.
That's awesome.
And it's, you know, we're trying to take it to another level.
And go ahead and tell everyone where they can find that series.
You can find it on melvinjacksonjr.com. You can also find it on YouTube. This Eddie Murphy role is mine, not yours. I even have it on my IGTV. You can check it out. If you can check out the whole 1-6 episode. I put it up there so you ain't gotta, you know, sit through the intro, the outro. You know, just get to go ahead and binge watch it.
Yeah.
You know,
everyone's binging nowadays.
All the way through. So you can get ready for season two.
Right. That's dope. So there was a part in episode two where you were doing different takes on Eddie Murphy roles in different films. Did you do that for your project that would shortly come after in The Price of Fame? Did you? How did you prepare to jump into Eddie Murphy's role?
Well, it was kind of, I guess I was already preparing for it without knowing
right.
it. You know,
yeah.
I think the stuff that I had watched and just kind of, you know, even doing stand-up, some people would see little things in Eddie, and I wasn't truly trying to, but I think that you watch somebody so much and you get compared to them that you start doing things that you're mm-hmm. not knowing that you're doing. But it's like now when you get a chance to portray him, like this was the whole thing. Like I want to portray him in his biopic.
Yeah.
That was the whole reason that I was doing the web series as well. So it's setting me up for multiple things.
Right.
You know, not little that I know that we're doing Coming to America too.
Mm-hmm.
So this will set you up for multiple things that you don't know and understand, like people are watching. And if it's something that you want, you got to create it. If you want to be a doctor, then you write a role for you being a doctor, as a lawyer. Same thing.
Yeah.
So I understand that this is what I wanted to do, and this is what I wanted to eventually happen, and it did. Yeah. You know, it didn't happen. It happened in a biopic, but it happened in a docudrama.
Right.
That will eventually, one day, you know, they'll do a biopic, and who knows if I, you know, if I'm able to betray him in that.
May betray him in the biopic. Who knows? Yeah. Now, that's awesome, though. That's dope. And so, for the Price of Fame, today is going to be another viewing, right?
Yeah, it's 5 p.m.
Let's
and 8 p.m.
share with everyone, because that's big news.
Right. The Eddie Murphy episode of The Price of Fame will air 5 p.m. today and 8 p.m. while I'm portraying the legendary Eddie Murphy. So make sure you tune in.
Tune in, for sure. And I just want to take a
moment.
On
the Reels channel.
Yeah, the Reels channel.
Look it up. Download the app if you don't have it.
For sure. And I just want to take a moment to thank you all for tuning in, watching the live chat, and just being here supporting Inside the Black Actor Studio, Black Hollywood Live, and AfterBuzz TV. I want to thank you all. And, it's just great being here with you and just talking. I'm getting inspired just talking to you. So you had the new edition at Curtis Blow, Eddie Murphy, Price of Fame. And so what was your most impactful experience in Hollywood thus far?
Impactful. I would say finding my purpose, in a sense of I came into this game being a manager, became an actor, and then figured out my biggest attribute was being a producer, because I'm able to bring people together, able to create opportunities, and not just for myself but for others. And I think that's more important, because as actors, we know we can be self-centered and it's about us.
Right.
And that's not who I am per se. Like, I'm always thinking of other people. So as a producer, I'm able to create projects and put other people in it. And now it's like people will contact me like, hey man, well, next time you do a project, I want to be in it. And you'll feel like I'm Jerry Bruckheimer or somebody, but that's just like when people respect what you do and they see that you hustle and you're doing things that they want to do, then they come to you. You know,
exactly.
Like, you know, like minds attract like minds, like minded people.
Yeah.
So it's definitely, you know, being a producer is something that I feel like is my best attribute above acting.
Okay. I like that. So this is actually a question from one of the viewers before on Instagram. They had posted, what is something that you do to prepare for the scene before the audition, and then something you do to prepare on set?
One, I'm trying to calm myself down, because sometimes, like, my heart will be real fast. It's weird. Like, you can do a bunch of auditions, but what I try to do is go in there and be believable. And so I tell myself, just understand, like, what it is that you're going to do. Mm-hmm. What is it that you're trying to sell them? Are you trying to sell them you? Are you trying to sell them the character? Or are you going to go in there and just be present?
Yeah.
Because, you know, people can read through BS. And so I just say, I don't want to go in and BS an audition.
Yeah.
And so I go in there just understanding that I want to have my lines right, you know. So that means that I have to slow down. Mm-hmm. Sometimes I get in my own way.
Yeah.
So I think the preparation is just being ready so you don't have to get ready.
Yeah.
As the quote says.
As the quote said, right? Infamous quote. So one of the things.
So I think the other question.
On set.
It's just pretty much, you know, you got the job. So now you just got to go to the next level. Mm-hmm. You just go and you like, man, I got to go even higher than I did in audition. Because now I have the job. Now it's going to come out on camera.
Yeah.
So people are going to see this. Mm-hmm. People didn't see the audition besides the people that were in the room. But now you're on set, you got to be good. So for me, it's like when I feel like, nah, I didn't like that, I'm like, hey, can I do that again? Yeah. Even if they're like, nah, you could be like, no, I need to do that for me.
Right.
And that's what you do.
And that's the difference between a professional actor and a non-professional actor. You really do have to own it. So one of the things you were quoted as saying that you would love to be known for is just a great businessman.
Yes.
Can you elaborate on that for?
Because I feel like, you know, you can be a great actor, a great producer, all these things. But if you're not a great businessman, you can do none of those things.
Mm.
I feel like you have to have your brand in order, your business in order. So that means when you conduct yourself, people understand, like, this person's really about business. You can go in there and you can talk to a bunch of executives and own the room because you're about your business. I mean, you're well prepared. You know what you're talking about. And now you can converse with them in a way that it's like, oh, this person is not just an actor.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that when you start understanding, like, it has to be bigger than you as one person or one entity. That's why I say I'm a brand, because I offer multiple services.
Right.
As an actor, as a writer, as a producer, as a director, like, I cannot just limit myself to just being an actor, because everybody is out here as an actor.
Exactly.
So I say being a business means that multiple streams of income is going to come in.
Yeah.
From whether it's acting, whether it's a producing, whether it's, you know, brand marketing, whatever it may be, it's going to be multiple streams of income because I'm a businessman.
Businessman, yeah. Value. Yeah. Love that. So I want to ask you a few questions, okay? This is going to be some fun questions.
All right.
And, yeah, just tell me what comes to your mind, the first thing that comes to your mind, all right? So what's your favorite word?
Favorite word. Oh, that's a good one. favorite word. God.
Okay. All right. What's your least favorite word?
Hate.
Nice. What's something that turns you on?
Something that turns me on. And it's what kind of way?
Whatever way you wanted to say. Doesn't have to be sexual.
Right. Like, okay. Something that turns me on. That's another good question. Turns me on. Something that turns me on. I'm going to say knowing that something is attainable.
Okay. That's turning around. How about something that turns you off?
Negativity.
What's this sound or noise that you love?
Sound or noise that I love. Hearing my kid's voice.
That's a good one. A sound or noise that you hate.
Nagging.
What profession other than your own would you participate in if you were not doing that?
Lawyer.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that was my thing. I was wanted to be a lawyer.
Oh, wow. Okay, my brother's a lawyer. You can win an argument, all right?
Right.
What profession would you absolutely not be a part of?
Profession. Man, the job I really didn't like was being a paper delivery boy. That was the worst. And that wasn't as an adult. It wasn't even paper delivery. It was just like, it was the worst.
Okay. And so last but not least, if heaven exists, what would you like to hear God say to you?
When I get there?
Mm-hmm.
Welcome home, son.
Nice. I like that. All right. Perfect. So being that you are the new Eddie Murphy.
Wow. You said it. I did.
Right.
There can only be one Eddie Murphy.
There can only be one.
Let's be correct.
There can only be one. But you are revamping and you're showing us him. So we get to see him through you, which is awesome on TV. And I have some quotes from some of his most infamous movies.
Okay.
And I want to see if you can finish some of the quotes, okay? Come on, Cletus. You walking over here.
But you're going to be limping back.
Hey. Wish he had a ding-ding right. noise. All right. You're going to be the nine-toed, havenous, limpinous bee in Harlem if you don't stop freaking with me. Now put the
knife down. Was it the knife? Yeah, knife. She had a knife.
Almost.
Put the switchblade down. Oh, put the razor down.
Yeah, put the razor. There you go. And last but not least, Rocky Marciano. They always got to bring up Rocky Marciano. Joe Louis was 127 years old when he fought.
Muhammad Ali? When he... What was the same name? Oh, Joe Frazier.
When he fought
Rocky Marciano?
Yeah. There you go.
It was in a barbershop.
Yeah. Cassius. Remember Cassius? And what was your favorite Eddie Murphy movie?
Favorite Eddie Murphy movie was definitely... Coming to America.
Yeah. And Coming to America 2. I don't know. I've heard mixed things. Like they greenlit it, but then they didn't.
They did. It's actually going to be released August 7th, I think, next year.
Oh, next year. Okay.
And Kenya Burris is writing it. He's an amazing writer, as you know. So it should be writing. Craig Brewer is directing it. So.
All right, guys. Well, like this video, like this this interview, and share it. And let's get Melvin in that movie. All right.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
All right. Well, I'd like to thank you so much for joining me here.
Thank you.
And I mean, it's been a pleasure talking to you and getting to know you a little bit more. And so go ahead and tell everyone listening where they can find you. They can follow you and do everything like that.
MelvinJacksonJr.com, Melvin Jackson Jr. on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. Always know that trust and believe in yourself and trust in God, that he'll bring you through whatever you're going through. I'm only here because of people like yourselves and God bringing me through.
Yeah, that's dope. And so, and all the transplants, everybody that wants to get into this business and don't know how to jump in, what's one thing you can give to them?
It's really hard to say one thing, but the simple thing I say is, I'll tell people, is that now you have things that we didn't have. You have Google, you have ways to find out. So I tell, if you come into a person asking to be in this business, you should already know certain things. You should come to them with something to the table. Some people want to be an actor, but they don't have a headshot, demo reel, or none of those things. It's like, already have that prepared and ready when you're asking somebody, hey, I want to be an actor. Okay,
right.
Let them know that you're taking it serious by taking classes, by doing the things to show that you're prepared.
Yeah, for sure. Well, thank you so much.
Thank you.
It's been a pleasure. And everyone, you can find me everywhere at I Am Danny Royce. Also, tune in next week, same place, at 2 p.m. for Inside the Black Actor Studio. We'll see you next time. Enjoy the rest of your weekend.
On behalf of our BHL staff, we would like to thank you for tuning in to Black Hollywood Live, the world's first digital broadcast network devoted entirely to urban entertainment and pop culture. Check out our Black Hollywood Live YouTube page for even more great programming and amazing content. And be sure to subscribe and like our channel when you do. I'm your BHL host, Nakia Monet, and you can find me on all social media at Kiki Boom Boom or at Black Hollywood Live. Black Hollywood Live, Hollywood redefined.
Views expressed here are those of the host only and do not necessarily reflect the views of BHL or its owners or principals.